it's my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker. The Valley Group field agents have scoured the state of California in the last few weeks, and we've come up with the best speaker we could tonight. His name is Sui, and he has come all the way from San Jose. Okay? He has a sobriety date of 9/25/2006. His favorite AA slogan is "Easy Does It." So we're going to let him come on up here and tell us how he does it. Come on.
My name's Sue. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very excited to be here tonight. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to come down. I'm excited. I wasn't excited when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I wasn't excited to be sober, but I'm excited to be sober tonight. I guess he just said a bit of my AA Facebook statistics, and I guess I'll start with that. My sobriety date is September 25th, 2006. So I've been sober a little over 8 years. You know, I got... Thank you. I guess it's a testimony to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got sober, if this matters to anybody, I got sober when I was 26 years old now. When I was 26 and I'm 34 years old now. I don't know if that matters, but if it does, there you go. I used to like to throw in that I was single too, but I was told that AA is not a dating service. And so, you know, my sponsor, whenever I go share anywhere, my sponsor in the beginning would tell me, "Hey, kid, you don't have a message, you just have a story." And I was instructed just to tell you guys what it was like, according to the big book, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, you know. And I'm going to try to be as honest as I can without sharing my fifth step with you guys. I know Rayanne and Ruth are here to go report back to my sponsor. And so thank you for coming. It's good to see you. And, you know, I have to preface this also. I have a very boring story. It's not a crazy story. You know, I once shared at a meeting, and this guy came up to me after the meeting and he said, "Sui, I'm so glad you shared, because you have such a boring story and I could relate." And I didn't know whether I wanted to slap him or give him a hug, you know, and so I have a very boring story. And, you know, AA is a very weird place, because in the time I've been here, I've sponsored guys who claim to be in like the Crips or like the Norteños and crazy gang members, and I've always had to tell them that in the interest of full disclosure, the closest I've ever come to a gang is I was in Beta Alpha Psi, which was a fraternity for accounting students. So just so you guys know, that's the kind of story I have, you know. And just to start off from the beginning, I grew up in a very loving home. And I know this is not everybody's story, and I was never stopped for love, and I was never stopped for attention. Even though I grew up in those circumstances, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous with people with way different backgrounds than I did, you know. And I grew up in a small country called Zimbabwe. So if you look at the map of Africa, right at the bottom is South Africa, and just north of that is Zimbabwe. And the only reason why I tell you where Zimbabwe is I was sitting in my first few meetings, and this girl said she was from Arkansas. And the whole meeting I couldn't concentrate, because I was just kept on thinking, where the F is Arkansas? And so so now you guys know where Zimbabwe is. It's kind of like the Arkansas of Africa, and that's where I'm from. And you know, I can't really remember my first drink. I've always had this attraction and affinity towards alcohol. The very first, you know, I just can't remember my first drink. I remember when I was 4 or 5 years old, I became the designated beer bottle opener for my uncle. And so I'd go over to his house, and he used to drink Castle Lager in these brown bottles. And he would say, "Who's going to open my beer bottle?" And I'd run over to the fridge, and I would be the first person there, and I'd pop open that beer bottle. And in between that transaction, I would sneak in a few sips, and then I'd make that bitter beer face, and I'd say, "Oh, this is disgusting. How do they drink it?" You know. And the very next week, I'd be at his house, And you'd say, who's going to open my beer bottle? And I've always run, the first one to run to the fridge. And I've always had this attraction to alcohol that I can't explain, you know. And the very first time I ever changed the way I felt, I was 14 years old. I went to an old boys school, and we wore school uniforms like those Harry Potter movies. And and the rest of the boys were putting paint thinners at the back of their ties and sniffing it. And so I put paint thinners at the back of my ties, sniffed it, changed the way I felt. And I guess this is not a paint thinners anonymous meeting, you know. Because I could share for like 45 minutes on the on my experience, strength, and hope on pain thinners, you know. And in fact, when I got sober, my old man used to have an auto body shop, and that's where I used to work when I got sober. And my biggest fear when I got sober, one of my fears was relapsing on pain thinners, you know, because that's a shitty way to go out, and you come back to meetings on Monday, and you're like, oh man, I went out on pain thinners this weekend. You know, and so I'm going to just kick forward to the first time that I remember getting smashed, okay? And the first time that I remember getting really drunk, I was 16 years old, and just to kind of give you some background about me, I've always been very socially awkward. You know, I was good at school, but never good at sports. I went to an old boys school. I was just nervous around people of the opposite sex. I was always full of fear. My mind was just kept on thinking of, you know, I was full of fear, and I always kept on thinking of two things. The first thing, I was thinking about me. And the second thing, I was thinking about what you guys are thinking of me, you know. And as a result, I was just paralyzed by fear, and that's the way I was, you know, just growing up. Just a guy who was just afraid. And I went to this beer festival at 16 years old, and my only intention that night was to talk to the girls. And I went to this beer festival, and I became like a wallflower. You know, and this night became like, I drank for 10 years after that, and this night became the template of my drinking for the next 10 years. And what happened that night is somebody slipped me a beer. I was so afraid and nervous, somebody slipped me a beer. And I took that drink, and some switch went off that I didn't know, and I couldn't stop drinking. I just drank, you know, I couldn't stop drinking. And what ended up happening is I blacked out, which is very characteristic of my drinking, and I ruined my time. I ruined everybody's time around me. I puked 15 times. I know that because I had a buddy that counted. That's the kind of people I hang out with, real champions, you know. And I and at the start of the night, I was so afraid of to talk to the girls, but at the end of the night, I guess I became rather charming, because how I ended that night is I was laying down on this girl's lap, crying. You know, just crying about how too sheltering and too loving my parents are, you know. Very smooth. And then that was my first time that I remember getting smashed, you know. And that girl said to me the next day, she called me up and she said, Suey, you know, you're a good guy, but you and alcohol just don't mix, you know. And throughout my drinking, people would say that, but towards the end, they stopped saying you're a good guy. They just said you and alcohol just don't mix, you know. And the very next day after that, I had these two thoughts. My first thought was, oh my God, because I had lost the sense of smell the next day. Temporarily lost this because I puked so much. I felt so sick the next day. And my first thought was, I am never going to do this again. This is disgusting. And the second thought was, if I try hard enough and long enough, I might get good. You know, and it doesn't take a genius to kind of figure out what route I chose. I just drank whenever I could and as often as I could, you know. And when, by the time I was 18 years old, my father had a small business that was doing really well. And he said, son, you got to go away to college. I don't care where you go and what you study, but you got to go to college. And by the time I was 18 years old, alcohol and the things that I was doing were starting to shape my goals in life, you know. And because I chose to go to study in this place in Cape Town, South Africa. And the way I chose that was, it was the 90s, and at at that time. Techno music was in vogue at the time. It was a thing to do, techno music, and Cape Town, South Africa was far away from home, and I could go there and drink as much the way I wanted to drink, far enough from far away from my family, and I would listen to techno and party, and that was my goal for higher education. So I went there, you know, and when I went to South Africa, you know, I was in this new country, in this new city, and just this new person, and I became a bar drinker. And alcohol, I got to say, you know, some people like to talk smack about alcohol. Alcohol, sometimes I feel I like to reminisce about it like an old girlfriend, you know, because alcohol did things for me that I just couldn't do for myself. You know, I was always a guy who was just deathly afraid, and I couldn't mingle with people. I would see if I would go to places and people seemed like they were getting along very well, and I just couldn't get along with people, and I'd go to a bar, and then I would just have one drink, and then I would just relax a little bit, and then, you know, by the end of the night, after quite a few drinks, I'd, from this shy, nervous guy, I'd become this flamboyant drunk. I was able to make friends. I was able to meet girls. I was able to do things with girls that I only imagined I'd do by myself. I was able to get into relationships. I was able to get out of relationships, which I thought was as equally important. You know, alcohol just, it seemed like it filled the gaps in my soul. It just felt like it completed me. Alcohol just seemed like it leveled the playing field for me, you know, and I would drink and it would level the playing field, and I would be able to mingle with people. I'd be able to be a part of life, and that's what alcohol did for me, you know, and I love to drink, you know, by the end of my 4 years in Cape Town, in college, I was pretty much drinking, you know, every day and doing other things on the side. I was 22 years old, and I was physically in so much pain with the amount of stuff that I was drinking and the amount of stuff that I was doing, you know, and I just couldn't stop drinking, and I just thought I was living a lifestyle of a partier's lifestyle. I just thought I was this party animal, I didn't know what to do with my life, and I got offered this golden opportunity to come out to the promised land, Fresno, California, and actually I came out to Fresno because and the reason why I came out here, I had this opportunity. My father was going to start a small business in Visalia down the road, that's why I came out to the United States, and it didn't work out, you know, but I came to Fresno, and my thinking of going to Fresno was, if I change my circumstances and the people that I hang out with and all the people, things, you know, my life will get better, you know, and that's what I thought. And I thought if I change my circumstances, I'll be able to not drink and do the things that I was doing in South Africa. And I came to Fresno, and for 1 year I really tried to focus on controlling my drinking. And I don't know if anybody here has tried to control his or her drinking, you know. And for me, by the end of that first year, I became the most restless I'd ever been in my life, the most irritable I'd ever been, and the most unhappiest and the loneliest I'd ever been. I just like trying to control my drinking. And what happened was I went out and I went to go look for the type of people that I ran with in Cape Town, South Africa. And they came in the form and shape of these international students. And I was an international student. I met up with these international students and my sponsor grew up in Cupertino, and Cupertino is like this town in the Bay Area, and he used to say that when he drank, drinking for him made Cupertino into Super Cupertino, you know, and I can relate because I was in Fresno, and I would be physically in Fresno, you know, and then I would start drinking, and I would have these psychic changes where I would feel like I'm in San Francisco or some metropolitan city like Manhattan Island, you know, and I'd be partying with the musicians and artists of Fresno, California, and I had a great time, and it was like short-lived. It was 6 months, you know, and after 6 months of doing that, my drinking escalated to proportions that I'd never seen before, you know, And by that time, I became like this two-encounter friendship kind of guy. You know, on the first encounter, I'll be able to be funny and charming and witty. And by the second encounter, I would normally lie or cheat on somebody or hit on their girlfriend. And so what would happen is I would make friends and then lose friends and make friends and lose friends. And by the end of my, you know, at the end of a few years, you know, my lifestyle became where I was drinking every day. And, you know, I started off drinking in Fresno. I thought I was only going to drink on a Friday night after work. And then it became Saturday night. And then it became Sunday night. And then Thursday night became a big party night, you know. And then pretty soon it was just Monday that I wasn't going to drink, you know. And the last 2 years of my drinking looked like this, you know. I wouldn't really wake up. I'd normally come to. And this is how this pattern evolved. I'd come to, and it was normally on an abandoned couch, you know. And I often used to get very envious of my friends who woke up next to strangers. I woke up alone. And I would come to, and I wouldn't know what happened the night before, and I'd just feel like this feeling of guilt and shame, because I didn't know what was happening, and I knew I did something wrong. And for the whole day, I would say, Sui, you're not going to drink today. 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 And then normally that day, or if not that day, the next day around happy hour, around 4 or 5 o'clock, something would click, and then I would say, Sui, tonight's not going to be that bad. Tonight's going to be different. Tonight's going to be different. You can have one drink. You can have one drink. And then I would go out and I tried to have that one drink, and I would have that one drink, and then there would be this vicious cycle, and then I would normally come to on this abandoned couch. And that's how the last 2 years of my drinking looked like, you know. And so the last 2 years, you know, I used to think that everybody left me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody abandoned me. And what I learned just recently is that people didn't abandon me. Well, what happened was I started to push people that loved me out of my life. I used to push them out, and I used to hurt them, and I used to push them, and I used to hurt them, because they got it in the way of my drinking. And that's what I did to people. I just pushed them out of my life. And so people didn't really abandon me. I just pushed them away. And by the end of my two, you know, the last 2 years of my drinking, that's what I did. It was just this lifestyle I was living. I thought I didn't hurt a lot of people, and then I realized I did when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I lived at home, but I would miss everything, every opportunity with my family. I would go out drinking the night before Mother's Day or the night before Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. I'd go out drinking, and what would happen is I was going to go just have a couple of drinks, and I would drink. And then all of a sudden, I'd come to on this abandoned couch during like about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would have missed the whole of Mother's Day, you know, and I would have missed the whole of Christmas or the whole of Thanksgiving. And then I would have too much guilt and shame to go back home to back. And so I would just miss the whole day away from my family. And so that's what I would do to my family, you know, and I would do things that I would just hustle people. And, you know, just before I got sober, I moved up to San Jose for a job, and you know, I was there, and I ran out of money once again, and I decided to hit up my father. I tried to hustle him for money, and I called him up, and I said, "Hey, Dad," you know, and he was so excited to hear my voice, and before he could say anything, I said, "Dad, I need some money. I ran out of money," and I could just hear his voice drop on the phone, and he said, "Son, I was so excited because today is my birthday," you know, and that's the kind of things I would do to people in my life. And around the same time, my grandmother passed away overseas in Zimbabwe, and my mother was in Fresno. And, you know, I could not make this. You know, my mother kept on calling me to go down from San Jose to Fresno. It's a 150-mile drive. And I couldn't make that 150-mile drive from San Jose to Fresno, because I knew if I left, I couldn't drink the way I needed to drink to deal with the things that I was going through. And that's the way my life became towards the end, you know. And I really didn't know what to do. And somebody suggested I go see a spiritual healer in the spiritual Mecca, I guess, of California, downtown Clovis, you know. And I went to go see the spiritual healer, and it was September 18th, 2006, you know, and I went to go see this lady, and her name was Diana. And I said to Diana, you know, I'd never said this to anybody else, and I said to Diane, Diane, I can't stop drinking, and I don't know what to do. And Diane had the magical answers, because I was paying her $75 an hour, so she had the answers. And so what she said to me, she said, Sui, for a guy like you, you just have to moderate your drinking. And I conveniently forgot that for the last 10 years, I tried to control and moderate my drinking in vain. You know, and so what happened was Diane did some hippie stuff with me, and she laid me down on this massage table and played with my energies and that, and meditated, and I left that day, and on September 18th, and that day was the first day I hadn't drank in a really long time, and I was like, wow. And the next day I didn't drink, but pretty soon I ended up at Sequoia Brewery where I used to drink, and I was moderating my drinking. And the way I was moderating my drinking was I was ordering half pints. And after the eighth half pint, I said, screw this. You know, and what happened was I went on this two-day bender, and I have a very anticlimactic story. And what happened was I got a DUI. You know, and I've heard a lot of your guys' DUI stories. I've been to DUI school. You know, my friend Kyle drove into an energy pole when he was drunk, and he took out all the lights of Berkeley. You know, that's a crazy story. My story is not that crazy. I was going down the wrong side of the road, going past the police station. You know, and that was September 24th, 2006, you know, and you kind of know when the deal's up, you know, and I wish I had a better story. If I knew that would have been my last drunk, you know, from that day up until now, I would have hoped for, you know, a police chase, you know, some CNN coverage, you know, but most importantly, I would have hoped that my last drink wouldn't have been a Bud Light, you know. And so that day I had to go home and explain to my parents that, you know, one more time I'd gotten into trouble, you know, and they just gave me this look, you know, and they didn't say anything, and this look was this, and it just broke me down, and this look was, from what I got of this look, it was, they didn't say anything, but it seemed like they said, son, we've loved you so much, we've cared for you, and all you do is keep on hurting us, you know, and that's what I got, and I was just broken down, and I didn't know what to do, and at that time I was in and out of this relationship with this one young lady, and I decided I was in and out of this relationship 9 times in the space of 2.5 years, and that's the chaos I was doing, and I decided that if I got back together one more time with her, my life would be better, and I would be able to, you know, work things out, and I went to see this lady, and she said, Sue, you know, what's up with you, where's your car, and I had to explain to all these things, and she said, Sue, I think you're an alcoholic. And I said, no, I just have a lot of bad luck, and I'm always at the wrong places at the wrong time. And she said, no, Sue, you know, a guy like you, once you start drinking, you really can't stop. And once you start, you never know what's going to happen. And but more or less, you're this fall-down drunk, you know. And I couldn't argue with that. And I didn't know what to do, and I'm one of those criers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just broke down, and I cried, and I just didn't know what to do, because for 10 years I've been just trying to do something about my drinking, and my life just became more and more and more and unmanageable, and I just didn't know what to do. And she suggested, why don't you try going to a rehabilitation facility, and we looked through the yellow pages, and we went through all the numbers in the yellow pages, and I was calling all these rehabilitation facilities, and at that time I was a foreign student. I didn't have any insurance or anything, and I couldn't get into any of their places. And at the end of the day, somebody suggested I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and so I didn't know any better, and I said, okay, I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, for the first 4 days, that was a Sunday, and my first meeting was on a Friday. And the reason why it took so long, because I kept, I would call every day, and I'll just be, and I want to welcome anybody who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was just so afraid. And I was afraid about how my life was going to turn out. At that time, I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol, you know, but my life was just too painful with alcohol, and I just didn't know what to do, I was just afraid. And so I want to welcome anybody who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, what I would do for those 4 days from that Sunday to that Friday, I would call central office, and they would say, and this was in Fresno, and they would say, the meetings at St. Teresa's Church, the meetings at St. Bethany's Church, the meetings at, you know, and so in my mind I thought AA was this Christian conversion program, because it was, you know, and I know it's not in now, but at that time that's what I thought, you know, I was just afraid, and so I finally, after 4 days of not white knuckling it, I didn't know anything what to do, and I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was at North Park Fellowship, and I went there, and it was in, you know, I looked around the room, and everybody was of a different ethnicity than I was, and everybody was of a different, or in my mind at least, was of a different socioeconomic level than I was, and I just thought nobody, I felt so tore up, and I was just more messed up, and everybody looked so cleaned up, and like they had never drank before, and my opinion was, none of these people have drank like I've drank, and none of these people have felt like I've felt, you know, what happened was I looked around the room, and I just thought nobody drank and felt like I did. What happened was, there was a birthday meeting in Fresno, and the way they celebrate birthdays, and maybe they do it here in Visalia, they don't do it the same way in San Jose, is the people who are celebrating birthdays, they sit up in the front and they just tell their stories, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You know, and that's what they did. There were four women who were celebrating their birthdays that night. The first person who shared was Amy A. And Amy A was this young, beautiful young lady. She had 1 year of sobriety. She told the story, and I could relate to everything about the story. And she told about how she loved to drink. And then she just told how it just turned on her, alcohol turned on her. She said, you know, one of the things she said, I just liked to get effed up. And then she started crying, you know. And I could relate. And in my mind, I thought, I just like to get effed up, you know. And I started crying. And she said she was an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And I was like, I can relate to that, you know. And Amy A changed the course of my sobriety, you know. And I've spoken a lot of meetings, I've always shared about Amy A. And there were other ladies who spoke, and the one lady, she shared about how she had a lot of guilt and shame and remorse that came as a package deal of her drinking. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I just had so much guilt and so much shame, and I just felt so unlovable, you know. One of the things that I've learned now is the reason why I felt so unlovable is because I just did a lot of unlovable things when I was drinking, you know, but that's how I felt. And then the other lady shared, and she shared about how she would try to stop drinking, but it's when she tried to stop drinking, alcohol basically was a solution. And if she didn't drink, she would feel restless and irritable and just unhappy and loneliness. And finally, she would have to have a sufficient substitute, otherwise she'd drink again. And she found that sufficient substitute in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And those ladies, those four ladies who shared, they gave me hope. And I know it's not everybody's story that they come in their first meeting and they get hope and they just want to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it was my first meeting, you know. I just cried in my first meeting because I knew that you guys had a solution for me, you know. And you guys, you know, something was working in your guys' life that could work in mine, you know. And you know, that meeting, there was a CHIP meeting, just like that CHIPS here, and I had no idea. I was just such in a mental fog. And I was sitting next to this old-timer, Tony, and they were giving out CHIPS. And they said, you come and get up, come and get your CHIP. And I ran up to the front, and I went to go get my CHIP. And I sat down next to Tony, and I said, what is this for? And he said, if you want to take a drink, put that in your mouth and wait for it to melt. And I had no idea about anything. I honestly thought that you guys were giving these new biomedical drugs in the form of CHIPS that would fight the craving, you know. And so when nobody was looking, I bit that CHIP. And that shit won't melt, especially not in my mouth, you know. And you know, and that's how ignorant I was of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and the things that you guys did here. I thought you guys were a Christian conversion program. I just had a lot of weird things, ideas, and this is where I like to talk about my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. My first sponsor was my tour guide to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for the first 2 months, I didn't get a sponsor. And I didn't get a sponsor because I was trying to find the right one. And what happened was, in that first 2 months, there was somebody who had 5 years of sobriety. And my opinion was that once you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like a club. You're in for life. You know, I thought once you're in. You don't have to do anything else. You just come to meetings and you stay sober for the rest of your life. And what happened was there was somebody with 5 years of sobriety, and that individual was a very smart man, and he drank again. And there was another girl who just came in before me, and she drank again, you know. And there was somebody who was in it, who had long-term sobriety, and then he relapsed, and he was in and out of sobriety, and he finally shot himself. And then there was somebody else just in this 2 months, and there was somebody who was in and out, and that individual hung himself, and that all happened in my first 2 months of sobriety. And that's when I realized about the fatal nature of the illness of alcoholism, you know. And that's what scared me to get my first sponsor. And as I said, my first sponsor became my tour guide to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, for the first month, I just had money for tobacco and coffee, and I didn't want to buy any of your literature. And so a very nice lady, Judy, gave me my first big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, what I did was, with that big book, I turned straight to the back, because what I was trying to do, I turned to the stories at the back of the book, because I was trying to find a 26-year-old Indian boy from Zimbabwe that had a drinking problem, you know. And and when I got my first sponsor, Tom shared with me a very novel idea. He said, why don't we start from the front of the book and work our way through? And so I did it, you know. And we started working our way from the front of the book, and we started working our way through. And in that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to find myself, you know, and I started to relate, you know. And one of the biggest blessings that happened for me was my first 2 months of sobriety, you know. It felt like a full-time job trying to stay sober, you know, because I would wake up in the morning and I would say, Sui, don't drink today. Don't drink today. Don't drink today. Don't drink today. And it would be like that for the whole day. And then at like midnight, I'd be like, okay, I didn't drink today, you know. And then the one time I got thrown in for like, there's like this, my parents had some visitors came, and my parents had a 12-pack of Heineken, you know. And for the first 2 months, it was my first 2 months of sobriety. And the whole night, I just kept on thinking, don't drink that Heineken, don't drink that Heineken, don't drink that Heineken. And I was in tears, and I was praying. And I think one of the biggest blessings was that obsession, somewhere working through that big book, went away, you know. And that's through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that somewhere along the other, I don't think about alcohol, you know, all the time like I used to, you know. And my life started to change. You know, I started to repair those relationships with my parents and that sort of. When I was 1 year sober, they used to say, you know, most alcoholics end up in some form of jail, like an institution or like a jail or a rehab facility or, you know, a mental institution or their mom's house, you know. And at 27 years old or 26, by the time I was 26, I'd never really moved out of my mom's house, you know. And when I was 27 years old and 1 year sober, for the first time in my life, I moved out of my mom's house and I became self-supporting through my own contributions. And that was, you know, I know that's not a big deal for anybody else, but that was a big deal for me, you know. And I started to repair that relationship with my parents. For the first few years of my sobriety, my mom would always call me and ask me, and she'd say, "Son, are you coming to Thanksgiving, or are you coming to Christmas?" And I'd get so offended. I'd be like, "Of course I'm coming. I'm your son, you know." And nowadays, my family calls me and they say, "When are you coming?" You know, and because they trust I'm going to show up. And I've shown up for all my mother's days. And I've shown up for all the Christmases, and I've shown up for Thanksgiving, and I've been a family member, and I've been able to repair those relationships that I pushed away out of my life. And you know, I really enjoy being sober today. There was a period of my sobriety with between 2 years and 3 years of sobriety where I just thought people were lying about being happy, joyous, and free. I thought they're lying. You know, and I wish people told the truth at meetings. And what I realized was I wasn't really committed and doing anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And when I was about four years sober, I got my first home group in San Jose, the Second Tradition Group, and it meets on Saturday nights. And I said, and I went to the commitment coordinator, and it's just like this group with a lot of commitments. And I said, "I'll do whatever you guys tell me to do every Saturday night." And for the last 4 years, I've done everything they've told me to do every Saturday night, you know, and I've been part of that home group. I've gotten commitments outside of that group and H&I and General Service, and my life just seems to get bigger and bigger, and I love sobriety. I really want to thank you guys for having me here today. Thank you for letting me share.